Chapter 24. The end of the summer relieved and depressed Robin. Alex was finally gone, and Ron was 1,500 miles away, but autumn was short in Minnesota, and the winter lay in front of her like an endless tunnel. Her life felt empty and silent. The nights that she spent with her books and her cat had moved from being comforting and restful to just being boring. She told herself that she needed to stop punishing herself and had to get out and live. Amanda agreed, and they together joined the Mississippi River Players, a local theater group that used an old warehouse close to the river to put on their plays. Robin found herself cast in a local playwright's one act called Curtains. The story revolved around a curtain shop in a small Midwestern town where she was the store clerk. The plot involved the increasing despondency of her pathetic and mousy little character. Sally, her character, eventually found love and meaning in her life, a sexual liaison with a mailman who had a fetish for lace. Amanda's role was that of a daily customer who filled Sally in on the goings-on round the town and who eventually discovered her affair with the mailman and told the mailman's wife and had Sally fired and driven out of the town. Robin believed they were both helplessly typecast, but Amanda had already begun boffing the director and telling Robin that the playwright was walking around with a constant erection that he was sticking out on Robin's behalf. Robin was unimpressed by the entire scenario. She had to agree that getting out of her apartment on a regular basis was good for her. One night, Amanda simply showed up at the bar where Robin had worked, accompanied by the director and author. Robin was furious, but agreed to go back to Amanda's to have a couple of drinks with them when she got off from work. After about an hour of drinking and small talk, Todd and Amanda announced that they were going to fuck, and anyone who wanted to join them was welcome. Robin said that she was going home, and Keith asked if she would mind dropping him off at his apartment. He was a tall, thin, dark-haired guy with a deep tan and large eyes. It wasn't until they got into her car that Robin smelled his cologne. She decided she liked the fact that one of the few guys she saw who didn't live in jeans. As she drove, she asked him about his play. "Oh, I know it's not very good, but I like the characters, and I think the experience of seeing my work in front of people is going to be good for me. Even though right now the whole idea scares the shit out of me, and I half hope that something is going to happen to keep from going on." "That's a natural feeling," said Robin. "There are things about your play that I like," he answered with a quick intensity that seemed to light up her car. "What are they?" "The characters are real," said Robin thoughtfully. "I don't think there's enough happening in the plot. But Sally is somebody who has feelings and thinks the way a lot of women that I've met think." "Coming from you, that's pretty good." "Why, do I seem like much of a bitch?" said Robin, laughing nervously. "No, not at all. But you seem to know a lot more about the theater than anyone else around here, and you're the only person I ever met who studied and acted in New York." "Did Amanda tell you that?" "Isn't it true?" Robin laughed nervously again. "Well, it's sort of true. I went to school in New York, but it's not like I grew up backstage or anything." "You're a better actress than anybody else that I ever met, and your opinion means something to me." Robin smiled deeply, and then they were at his house, and he asked her if she wanted to come in and have some coffee, And she told him that she didn't think so. "Could I take you to dinner sometime?" he asked easily. "Why don't we just leave things the way they are for right now?" Robin gave herself a disgusted look from the inside. That really wasn't what she wanted to say. "Don't say it," he laughed with mock terror. "Please." The dreaded response that every guy who has ever asked a girl lives in terror of. "Let's just stay friends." Robin laughed too. "That wasn't what I was thinking. I work nights, and between rehearsals and my job, there isn't very much time. Besides, dating someone that you work with on a play is absolutely deadly. So you're telling me to ask you again after the play is over?" "If you don't, I'll ask you," said Robin. Robin drove home smiling and dreamy. Something real and natural was finally going to happen to her if she didn't figure out a way to louse it up. Chris Calvin had become used to the strong smell of gas fumes in the hall between the second and third floors. His apartment was on the fourth floor, and at first the fumes had alarmed him, but now they were something to which he'd grown accustomed. He was carrying a sandwich and some fresh ground coffee from the Zabor's. His book bag was heavy, and the ascent had him sweating by the time he reached his apartment. The music from the radio that he'd left on to discourage thieves and the hot air smacked him like a wall when he opened the door. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw a trio of roaches heading for cover. He switched on his fan and opened all three of his windows, hoping for a bit of a cross breeze. Then he stripped off his clothes and climbed into the stall shower that was centrally located in his kitchen. He saw two more roaches try to run out the top of the stall when he turned on the water. He knocked them off of the wall, stepped on them. Then he drowned them for good measure with a sneer on his face that twisted the ends of his mustache. He made the water as cold as he could get it and sighed with relief as the heat seemed to course out of his body through the top of his head. He began to feel refreshed. He didn't bother to put clothes on after his shower, but sat on the floor with a couple of pillows under him and his books and notes spread out all around him. He began to read again the class torts case of the unlucky conductor who had attempted to help a man laden with fireworks onto his train. Of course, the man had stumbled, and the fireworks had discharged, causing the man serious injury. The railroad had been sued and held in a famous opinion written by Oliver Holmes to be responsible for the man's injuries. He looked at his notes on the case and wondered if he would have been able to see how the law was not at all concerned with the good intentions of the conductor. Vaguely, he wondered what had happened to the railroad worker after the incident, but then he decided that he didn't have the time to clutter his mind with those kind of anecdotal details and pressed on. By 9 p.m., the apartment had cooled considerably. He decided to take a walk in order to give his head a chance to clear so that he could move on to his last prep for tomorrow's class. He pulled on jeans and a t-shirt and headed down the stairs and up to the all-night fruit stand. He bought a box of chocolate donuts and started back. He liked the way he felt blended in with other people in his neighborhood and thought for a second about the contrast of this life and the one he'd been living last month. But somehow, the image of Warren Lashley worked its way into his reverie, and he mentally kicked the image in the balls as he concentrated on not stepping in dog shit. On the way back to his place, he heard the telephone from the third floor and ran up the last flight of stairs into the apartment to try to catch the call. The sound of Lorene's voice shocked him and caused the donut box to slip out of his hand. Chris, this is Lorene. I know. Are you going to hang up on me? What do you want? I've been thinking about you and wondering how you're doing. Yeah? How'd you get the number? I called your mother. She must have been happy about that. Actually, she was very pleasant. That's good. You don't want to talk to me, do you? Not really. Chris, I wanted to tell you that I was sorry and that I never knew that Warren was planning on doing that with the landlord. Chris didn't answer. I was wondering if maybe I could come into the city and we could have dinner down in your neighborhood some night. I'll think about it. I know that you really don't want to stay angry at me for this long. That's not true, said Chris. I really think it would be better for me if I stayed feeling just the way I feel right now. There was a long pause while Chris stared down at his box of donuts and lightly kicked it with his foot. Look, if you want to come over, give me a call some evening. I'll let you know what I'm doing. When Lorene put the phone down, she stared across the table at Warren, who was puffing hard on his pipe and pushing back against the wall with his chair. How does he sound? Like he's very pissed off and very alone. Do you think that dinner will come off? I think that he'll make me wait, but that if I'm persistent enough, he'll give in. Do you think that he'll ever understand that I had to do what I did? No, said Lorene, laughing at Warren's look of concern. I think he'll probably hate you forever. Me too, for that matter. Warren returned to his papers while Lorene went into the living room stereo. She selected a Bob Dylan album and placed the needle on a cut. Dylan's twang cut through the half-empty rooms. Mama, take this badge off of me. I can't wear it anymore, Dylan pleaded. Warren grimaced. The house felt cold.